Last summer, writer John Ridley had a new movie, Undercover Brother, and a new novel, A Conversation with the Man, about an African-American comic trying to make it in the 60s. He opens for the Rat Pack in Vegas and becomes the first black comic on The Ed Sullivan Show. Ridley's movie, Undercover Brother, which is now out on video and DVD, affectionately satirizes the black action films of the 70s and takes on some of the preconceptions that blacks and whites have of each other today. The film is adapted from a web-based animation created by Ridley. He co-wrote the screenplay. Terry spoke with John Ridley last summer. The film stars Eddie Griffin as an action hero stuck in the 70s with his gold Cadillac, leather suit, platform shoes, and huge afro. He teams up with a group called the Brotherhood that's fighting a white villain known as the Man. The Man has devised a plot to prevent a popular African-American politician from becoming president. Here's Undercover Brother making his first appearance at the Brotherhood after learning about this political conspiracy.
So the conspiracies we believe for all these years are really true? The NBA really instituted the three-point shot to give white boys a chance?
Absolutely.
So the entertainment industry really is out to get Spike Lee. Is that right?
Come on, man. Even Cher got an Oscar.
Cher! And OJ really didn't do it.
Let's just move on, shall we?
John Ridley, welcome back to Fresh Air.
When adapting Undercover Brother for a movie, did you change the humor at all, thinking, well, it has to reach a much larger audience, so more people have to get the jokes, so that the references and the jokes have to be different?
Well, I didn't want to, and I avoided it as much as humanly possible. Anytime you write a script, there are any number of changes that take place on a conceptual level or because of budget or time constraints. But for me, I felt like, and I do still feel like, that in our society right now, in terms of entertainment, there isn't a lot of entertainment that's very pointed or very political. You know, I look at this film, and in some ways I think it's great that we're talking about race, that we're joking about race, that we're saying it's not such a big deal. But you look back at, like, films, say, like Blazing Saddles or television shows like All in the Family, where race was always a topic, it was always joked about, it was frank and it was satirical at the same time, and we just don't see that much anymore. And I think in some ways it's kind of disappointing. I think a lot of ways television and films, they really don't confront things that are political issues in a humorous, insightful way. I think a lot of times it's better to go at a topic with humor, relaxes people, and people can deal with it a little bit better when it's not so serious.
Undercover Brother is in part an homage to the black action films of the 70s. Which were the ones that were big when you were coming of age?
Well, when I was coming of age, there were, I guess, two groups. They were the really bad blaxploitation films, films like Blackula and Scream, Blackula, Scream. I actually remember going to see Scream, Blackula, Scream with my dad, because I just loved the title so much. I just thought, you know, Blackula is such a, it's such a wonderful title. It's so evocative. How can you not enjoy that? But I also remember, and I remember especially seeing some really quality black films like Sounder, Bingo Long, The Traveling All-Stars, The Man. I remember seeing a very powerful film. My parents really wanted me to see that. It was about the first black man to become president of the United States of America. James Earl Jones was the star of it. And an incredibly powerful film in terms of the issues that it dealt with. There was a black man, and it was George Sanford Brown, who's this radical, who ends up shooting a politician in South Africa during apartheid. He escapes to the United States. And he asked James Earl Jones, the black president, for asylum. And at the end of the film, James Earl Jones sends this black guy back to South Africa to face his crimes. Now, that's incredibly powerful. For a blaxploitation film, which is supposed to be a very strong statement about blackness, not letting George Sanford Brown stay in the United States, but saying you have to go back and face your crimes. I thought that was an incredible statement, a very brave one, because it took a chance and perhaps alienating its very audience, a black audience, but saying, you know what, we have to do what's right. And no matter how much we're oppressed or people put us down, we still have to stand up to a higher moral ground. It was a great film.
Generally, your new novel is about the character, what this comic faces as an African-American in show business. Tell us a little bit about the character of Jackie Mann.
Well, Jackie Mann is a guy who's really in search of self. He lives during the... He's born in the 1930s during the Depression and has his rise to what prominence he has in the middle 1950s. And Jackie is a guy who doesn't want to be treated as most black people are treated at that time. And he gets it in his head that, you know, people who, black people who are celebrities, who are athletes, are much more accepted by white society. He sees them on television. He sees them at sporting events. He sees white people around them and near them, as he likes to put it, within touching distance of each other, which is sort of the highest level of acceptance in his mind for black Americans. And so he sets out on this journey. He says at the very beginning of this book, I just want to be famous. I want to be famous so that I can be accepted. But his quest for fame ends up chipping away at himself, at what he is, at how he thinks about himself, at how he's perceived by people who are close to him, his friends and his family. And the question becomes, what's more important, to be accepted by the community at large but have no self-esteem? Or is it better to feel good about yourself, to believe in yourself, but have to live a life of struggle because other people look down on the choices that you make in life? And that's Jackie's quest.
I'm going to ask you to do a reading from the early part of the book, and this is when the comic Jackie Mann is talking about the early days of Vegas when he's performing there.
It was 1959, and the only difference between Las Vegas, Nevada, and Birmingham, Alabama, was that down south they posted signs telling a black man where he couldn't go and what he couldn't do. Whites only. Colors not allowed. In Vegas, you had to figure that out on your own. You figured it out quick style. Stay off the strip. Stay on the west side. Stay the hell away from their casinos. Didn't matter how well you did in the showroom. Didn't matter how much the audience laughed or clapped or how many bows you took. Out there it was still 1959, and out there blacks weren't welcome. Not to stay overnight, not to eat, not to gamble. More than anything in the world, I wanted to gamble. Not for the jazz of laying a bet or the sake of wagering money. What I wanted was to stand at a table with all those people, suited men, ladies in their best dresses, living high and living fast and living cocktail society. I wanted to see them do a Red Sea part as I made my way to the roulette table and listen to all their star-struck bits. Great job tonight, Jackie. Heck of a show, Jackie. Don't know when I cracked up as much. Would you mind saying hello to the Mrs. Jackie? She's such a big fan of yours. It would mean so much. I wanted them to fawn and gush and throw me their love, same as they threw it at me when I was performing, when I was standing 3 feet above them. I wanted them to accept me. Accept me? They couldn't even see me. I got paid nearly $1,000 a week. I got pulled back on stage to do more time by the biggest stars alive. I got standing O's. And when it was all over, I got sent out the back door. You know what went out the back door? Trash went out the back. Stinking garbage and rotting food and black comics got sent straight to the alley, never mind how well they'd just done in the showroom.
That's John Ridley reading from his new novel, A Conversation with the Man, about a fictional stand-up comic named Jackie Mann. You must have heard great stories about the early days of Vegas, and particularly interesting what it was like for African-American comics then when the place was still pretty segregated.
Yeah, it was amazing because in Vegas, during its early days, it became such a mecca for live stage entertainment. I mean, everybody went there, from the biggest acts to the wildest acts like Louis Prima. Even Noel Coward did an amazing run at the Desert Inn. I mean, here's this very genteel, very sophisticated playwright who just, I mean, did incredible box office there. So everybody played there, and certainly the biggest black stars, Nat King Cole, Pearl Bailey was there, Harry Belafonte, but they could not stay in the casinos. There was a part of town called Westside. It was just a very rundown part of Vegas where all the black entertainers had to go and stay at a boarding house that was really kind of a rundown boarding house. And not only was it rundown, but the woman who ran it actually charged the black entertainers more than they would have had to pay if they could have stayed on the strip. So you even have black people back then taking advantage of the segregation. But there was one story, it was, I think it was Nat King Cole, who went out, was actually allowed to stay in a casino at one point, but was not allowed to fraternize with a lot of the white patrons there. And one day he just said, you know, to heck with it, I'm going swimming in the swimming pool. He jumped in the swimming pool. You know, in his mind, he said, you know what, I'm integrating the pool. I don't care what anybody says. And after that, the white patrons, they complained, and they had to drain the entire pool. Took all the water out of the pool after Nat King Cole went in it and filled it up again with water because the whites who were staying at the casinos back at this time did not want to go into a pool, did not want to share the water with a black man.
It must have been interesting for you to write about this era when comics were aspiring to, you know, play these big nightclubs like the Copa. And there were, you know, there were clubs in the East Coast and the West Coast and Florida that were these big, glamorous places. I mean, now if you're a comic, you're likely to spend years on the comedy club circuit. But, you know, there was a sense of glamour then. Are you sorry at all that you missed that? Or do you not feel like you would have fit into the kind of glamour scene anyways?
Well, it's very weird because I certainly miss... I feel like I missed out on something because you read about these places, you hear stories about it, you hear other entertainers talk about this age where, you know, men and women, they actually got dressed up. They went out. It was a big night for them. It wasn't just, oh, I'm going to put on blue jeans and a sweater and go to a club or something. It was a big night, you know, for parents, for adults to get away from their kids for a while, to have a really good meal, to have a couple of cocktails, and sit back and either listen to a huge comic, a very famous comic, or someone like Frank Sinatra or Dean Martin, or to see Martin and Lewis on stage. And we look back, or certainly I look back on that time as being a wonderful time. But at the same time, you know, certainly if I was a black guy back then, you know, I couldn't get into these clubs. I wouldn't be seated at these clubs. There was no way I could go in and see this entertainment no matter how badly I wanted to.